Kamasi, who is your biggest inspiration as a saxophonist?
I have to say John Coltrane. I had a lot of them, but definitely when I was about 16, I kind of like was able to kind of grasp what he was doing, and it affected me in a way that I can't really describe. You know, I always kind of like compare it to like, you know, staring at the sun. Like, you can't really tell how amazing it is, but once you can, it's kind of overwhelming.
Could you tell me the story behind the epic?
Well, in 2010, Flying Lotus asked me to make a record for Brain Feeder, and I immediately thought of there's a collective of musicians that I grew up with in L.A. since I was a kid, and I just knew I wanted to kind of capture the sound that we had been cultivating, or at least my version of our sound that we had been cultivating since we were kids. So I reached out to all of them, and we ended up deciding to kind of come together for a whole month in December of 2011 and record not just my album, but 8 other albums as well. And in the end, you know, we ended up with like 190 songs, 3 terabytes of music, but I ended up with 45 songs myself, which through a very difficult process, I was able to kind of reduce to 17 songs, which still was more than what I was looking for, but I ended up kind of getting this story kind of come to me that inspired me to make the album one entity and keep it together, because it felt like one statement. And so that's kind of how it ended up being what it is.
Now, on the recording, the ensemble soars on the tune Misunderstanding. It's a great tune.
Oh, yeah. It was, that's a... Yeah, that was a powerful song for us in the studio too. It came on a day where we were all in there together, everyone, in one room, and it was a powerful moment for sure.
And the solid groove of Eskeem is hard to resist.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that song is kind of a combination of 6/8 and 4/4, and it kind of is deceptive and where the beat lays, and like once you can kind of find that groove, it is pretty, it locks you in a way. And then it's also open to like allow you to kind of like really soar. So that's why, you know, a lot of times when you hear myself or anyone else solo on that song, they kind of get locked in and then they kind of explode into this thing. It's a cool song in that way.
What was the most challenging song of the entire recording for you?
Change of the Guard, actually, you know, took the most, because I was, on that song, I was really trying to pull out the deepest parts of the depth of every musician. And then when I was writing the string and choir entrance, I really wanted it to connect to everything that was happening. So it was like it was the most challenging song as far as recording with the choir band. It was the most challenging song writing the string choir. And then mixing-wise, it was the most challenging, because it was just to have all the voices and all the elements of that song kind of be present was difficult. And it's ironic that, like, in working on that song is how I ended up getting that story that really inspired the album to be what it is. It happened while I was working on that song, Change of the Guard.
Now, among the many fine artists on this new recording, Dwight Tribble's here on the vocals. Could you tell me about the role that he played? Tell me more about the role that he played on this recording.
Well, Dwight's someone I've known since I was a kid. He's been one of our heroes growing up in L.A. since I was young. And Patrice Quinn is kind of always sang with the band. But I've always loved Dwight's voice, and when we were thinking to finish Malcolm's theme, I knew I wanted a male voice to be in it. I just immediately saw Dwight, and he just brings such a spirit, and like he's such a great storyteller when he sings songs. It's like he brings the words to life. And then he was super gracious enough to actually come and like sing in the choir too. So it was really cool to have him, you know, just be a part of it and be so supportive of us. And, you know, because we all grew up listening to Dwight, and he's always kind of like really been a great supporter to us since we were kids.
Now, listening to the multiple bassists and drummers and other instrumentalists here on this recording, the Epic, it sounds very similar to Miles Davis's recording Bitches Brew. It's has that same vibe to it.
Yeah, I mean, Miles Davis's groups, just his whole approach to how he always left the music open to the musicians that he played with, and like, you know, he always captured. There was no one who played with Miles who was unimportant. You know what I mean? Like, he always kind of like really fully utilized everyone that he had with him. That and the album for me that was the most influential was In a Silent Way. But Bitches Brew, definitely, I can definitely hear that. You know, I grew up listening to that album too. So there's a lot of Miles Davis albums that have a voice in what we're doing. Sure.
Now, have you listened to the complete In a Silent Way Sessions box set? Have you heard that?
Yeah, I did. I have. It was kind of a trip because, like, I'd always gotten so used to hearing them as one thing, you know what I mean? So hearing them kind of like as separate tracks was kind of a different experience for me, you know? But it was cool. It was cool to hear, like, how it really, you know what I mean, how it was before they kind of put it together, you know?
Yeah, there was a track on that called Early Minor that it was just a fantastic track, and I have to wonder why it wasn't released at the time. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand. I mean, like, there's only so many, I mean, especially back then, you know, just with the limitations as far as the medium, you know, like, in the end, you had to just pick what was going to make it on there, you know. I have lots of songs that I thought were going to make it on the album that just, in the end, you have to kind of just, you know, what makes sense with the statement that you're making, yeah. But yeah, it's always like that. There's always like songs that you like can't believe didn't make it onto the album, yeah.
How long have you been working with Wide Hive Records?
I met them. That was probably 2005. I had to be six years ago, and I was actually working on a record for Phil Ramlin. Is when I got introduced to Wild Hive. And then Greg hit me up about doing an album with some musicians up in the Bay, up in North California, for a record, for a group that he was putting together called Throttle. And we did Elevator Jazz. It was really cool. It was fun. It was like a different approach to playing for me. It was very like, all my songs are kind of like drawn out long, you know, panoramics, and like they were really into like these kind of short bursts of like energy and expression that just kind of like come and then they go, you know. So it was cool. It was fun experience. He actually helped me with the Epic too. Like after I recorded my album and the Pro Tools digitally, I transferred it over to tape, and he helped me do that too. So I went up there and did that with him.
Now, you also were featured on Harvey Mason's tune Black Frost, as well as Stanley Clark's I Have Something to Tell You Tonight on those recent recordings. Those are really fine performances.
Yeah, it was an honor. It was, you know, playing Black Frost with Harvey Mason was like a dream. It's like the closest I ever get to being Grover Washington. And then, you know, I mean, Harvey is such a great guy, and it was such a great, like, experience to kind of learn from him as a person. And then, like, you know, I was, like, so hard for me not to hide my starstruckness when I was working with Stanley Clark. You know, I just grew up listening to him so much, and he had such a big influence on me musically that it was amazing to get a chance to, like, to make music with him. It was great.
Now, you're going to be performing at the Slowdown on Friday night here in Omaha. Could you tell me about that gig, who you're going to be performing with?
Yeah, I have, for most of the gig, I have a 7-piece, but I have a special guest that's coming along with us. Actually, two special guests, so there'll be 9 of us there in Omaha, which will be really fun. I mean, it's a smaller group than the people who heard on my album, but the cool part about it is that, like, you know, I leave the music very open, I always do, so it's every show was kind of a unique experience. And then, like, you know, with the smaller group, you get a kind of a more intimate view of each musician. And, you know, we have more room to move and adjust and kind of create on the spot. So it becomes a really, like, open, kind of spontaneous, you know, event. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be really cool. And I have Terrace Martin's coming down, and my dad is actually going to come through and play on something. So it's going to be fun.